hope. For some of us, just saying the word hope conjures up the well-known bit of poetry from Emily Dickinson. Hope is the thing with feathers that perches in the soul and sings the tune without the words and never stops at all. I had to memorize that in high school, I think. But it also reminds me of the Greek myth of Pandora's box. Some of you might remember that. In the myth, Prometheus steals something very precious from the gods. He steals fire. With fire, people are less dependent on the goodwill of the gods for their lives. Of course, this makes the gods what? Angry. Gods don't like having things taken from them. So they created a young woman whom they called Pandora. Pandora was given many very special gifts. She was given beauty and music and pleasant speech and charm and most especially that most human of qualities, curiosity. When she was ready, the gods sent Pandora to be a wife for Prometheus's brother, Epimetheus. And the gods also sent along a gift for the couple, a beautifully decorated box, elaborately carved and inlaid with precious gems, which Pandora was instructed to give to her husband and never, ever, ever open. At first, all was well. Pandora and Epimetheus were newlyweds, after all, and they had better things to do than wonder about this apparently lavish gift bestowed upon them. But Epimetheus knew something about the gods, and he knew how jealous and tricky they could be, and he wondered what was up with this present. So he saddled up his horse, and he told Pandora he'd be back in a couple of days, and that she was under no circumstances to even touch the box while he was gone. He then rode for 2 days and nights to find his brother and ask him what he thought of this mysterious box. Well, upon hearing Epimetheus' story, Prometheus sent him straight home because whatever was in that box couldn't be good if it came from the gods, and Epimetheus never should have left Pandora alone with it. Meanwhile, back at home, Pandora did all of the good housewifely things, right? She cleaned and dusted the house and prepared her simple meals and waited for her husband's return. When she cleaned, she was drawn to the ornate box, curious about what it might contain that was so precious. At first, she was afraid to even touch it with her dustcloth. But nothing happened when she got up the courage to just quickly polish the gems on its surface. So she went back to carefully clean the ornate carvings. And finally she convinced herself, well, she should just take a peek inside, just for a second, just to make sure the inside was as clean as the outside. But when she lifted the lid, out came a boiling, buzzing black cloud, which soon revealed many strange-looking, bizarre winged creatures which flew about her head and then battered at the door and the windows, and Pandora managed to slam the lid back on the box. But the creatures found the one window that was open, just a crack, and they flew out, dispersing on the wind to the four corners of the earth. Meanwhile, Epimetheus, on his way home, drew closer and closer and started seeing things he'd never seen before. He saw friends arguing with one another. He saw apples on healthy trees shriveling. He saw destruction. He saw disease. He saw despair. When he arrived home, he found his wife, his beautiful wife, Pandora, huddled on the floor near the box, weeping. She told Epimetheus what she'd done, and that as she put the lid back on the box, she glimpsed something else, something shiny which remained within. Well, curious about the shiny thing, Epimetheus and Pandora opened the box one more time. What did they have to lose? To their surprise, something silvery and radiant rose from its depths. Hope. In some versions of this story, hope takes the form of a bird, like Dickinson's Thing with Feathers. In other versions, it appears as a fragrant flower, perhaps like Joanna's gardenia. Somehow, Pandora and Epimetheus knew all those hurtful, mean, and destructive things, the black buzzing cloud of creatures, they could be seen as punishment from the gods for not obeying, but they could also be viewed as part of the fullness of life. For life includes wonderful things and can also include difficult and tragic times. Yet there is hope. Hope. The dictionary says that as a noun, hope is the feeling that what is wanted can be had, or that events will turn out for the best. As a verb, hope is to look forward to with desire and reasonable confidence. Now, you might have noticed that in both of these definitions, there's a positive sense that whatever is wished for or expected will arrive. I think of this as tooth fairy hope. When my children were young and losing baby teeth, they hoped for money from the tooth fairy. Honestly, they knew they were getting some coins. They knew they were getting money, but I'm sure they hoped for more than they actually received. The point is that this kind of hope is like saying, I hope the sun comes up in the morning. The sun will come up. Even if it's cloudy, it's up there and we know it. It's a sure thing. Well, your experience may be different from mine, but hoping for a sure thing, that's easy. Hoping for something that seems unlikely or even impossible, yeah, that's a lot harder. And there are a lot of reasons for hopelessness right now. Here are a few off the top of my head. The cost of higher education. Crushing student debt that holds a whole generation of our young people hostage to our future. Mass incarceration. Did you know that statistically there are more people of color incarcerated today than were held in slavery prior to World War II, or the Civil War? We see continuing assaults on our environment, mass shootings in the news, the rise of violence in general, and of course, cutbacks in funds for the homeless, the hungry, and those unable to afford the basics of life. Sounds like a contemporary language version of that strange looking winged creatures causing disease, destruction, and despair, doesn't it? It's enough to make me want to go back to bed and pull the covers over my head and just wait it out. I have friends, as I'm sure many of you do, who constantly bemoan the awful state of the world. We're going to hell in a handbasket. It's terrible. Everything's wrong. And yet, those friends also maintain a steadfast sense of hope. Because they are the ones who write letters to elected officials, who speak out at public hearings on a variety of issues, who volunteer their time when and where they can, who show up for vigils, who march and protest for peace, for justice. And they recruit others to write letters, speak out at public hearings, volunteer their time, show up at vigils, march, and protest. This is hope. Unlike the dictionary definitions, I want to propose that hope is not passively expecting that things will turn out well and just waiting for that to happen. For many years, I've held a quote from former playwright, political prisoner, and later elected president of the Czech Republic, Václav Havel, as my own personal mantra on hope. Havel wrote, quote, Either we have hope within us or we don't. It is a dimension of the soul, and it's not essentially dependent on some particular observation of the world or estimate of the situation. Hope is not prognostication. It is an orientation of the spirit, an orientation of the heart. It transcends the world that is immediately experienced and is anchored somewhere beyond its horizons. Hope is definitely not the same thing as optimism. It is not the conviction that something will turn out well, but the certainty that something makes sense, regardless of how it turns out. End quote. The certainty that something makes sense, regardless of how it turns out. Wendell Berry elsewhere has suggested that hope must be founded on the ground under our feet. Hope is lighted by the light that is within us, the light of imagination, which allows us to envision a better future than the present in which we live. Now, when I shared this quote from Havel with some of my seminary classmates a few years ago, they were dismayed that there was nothing there to assure one that your goal could be attained. They wanted an optimistic sort of hope. They wanted, I do A, hoping for B, and because A works, then B occurs. Problem solved. Sometimes the world works like that. Mix together a specified list of ingredients, bake at the right temperature for the prescribed time, and voila, your hope for muffins for breakfast can be fulfilled. But more often, there's no linear path from the point of desire to the goal attained. What makes sense may not lead one immediately from A to B. A may seem to have no effect or lead to something else, but it may still be an incremental, almost unnoticeable step of progress toward B. Furthermore, and quite perversely, on occasion, what looks like something good will turn out to be harmful, while something that may not be desired turns out to be helpful. So how do we find or create hope when all seems hopeless? I believe that this orientation of the spirit can be cultivated. And these words attributed to Joan Baez seem to be the key. Action is the antidote to despair. Action is the antidote to despair. And there are many ways to take action. First, you can take a look around and see what actions others are doing. See if you can find anything that doesn't cause you despair. See if you can see sources of hope that are already evident. You know, the words of Fred Rogers, Mr. Rogers, are shared often after disasters and many terrible events, and are helpful for many. He says to look for the helpers, look for those first responders, those people helping others. Look at the good work and all that others are doing to help people. So look around. Look for the good things happening in your family, in your community. Looking to find an obvious source of hope is kind of an internal action. You're not taking action yourself. But it is an action, and it helps. It's a little action that none of the rest of us can really see. Now, my colleague Meg Riley says it's also important to make choices in your actions that help sustain a positive focus, to find ways that enable you to claim your own agency. For Meg, maintaining a positive focus means avoiding some news media outlets, which she believes just fan the flames of panic and induce a sense of helplessness. And you know, after I heard Meg say that, I noticed that even the news outlets that I like can make me feel anxious and agitated. I think she's onto something. Now, claiming agency, your ability to act when feeling overwhelmed can be difficult, but it is an important step. Making a choice to do something, even if it's a very small thing, supports one's sense of hope. Maybe it's something as simple as opting to smile at the people you encounter during your day. Or saying something encouraging when you see a parent struggling in a store with their young children. Or maybe purchasing a few extra pairs of mittens or socks to donate to a homeless shelter for families. These are small things that are probably easy for many of us, but they're very important. A smile and a thanks to a harried clerk just might make that clerk's day and will make you feel better too. A smile and, "I remember those days and how difficult it is to shop with children," helps the parent who's struggling know that they're not alone and that they're not a bad parent and that this too shall pass. Donating a few pairs of mittens or socks for an individual or family who has none is a gift more precious than gold. Small acts like this nurture your own sense of hope and help encourage a lighter spirit and hope in others. Another choice that one can make is to work with a group in which members of the group support one another and sometimes really get to see change happen. And if you look, you can find hopeful acts in the public square all around. I remember about 10 years ago, a group of folks from this church actually worked against the Wisconsin Marriage Amendment. That was a very hopeful act. And when it passed, despite our best efforts, we commiserated with one another. For me, as a minister, performing weddings is always a joyous occasion. Performing weddings for gay and lesbian couples before marriage equality was a supremely hopeful act. And every such wedding I've officiated for since has been extra celebratory. Some other hopeful acts have a specific focus like this, like volunteering for a Habitat for Humanity project. This fulfills hope for a particular family, but it is also an act of hope for a neighborhood, for a community, indeed for our world. Some acts are even bigger and kind of play out on the national stage. My colleague Barbara Gayden and members of her congregation outside St. Louis, Missouri, have held a weekly vigil, rain, shine, snow, outside their church since the death of Michael Brown over a year ago. They're holding hope out in the public square. I'm sure you're aware of other purposeful groups of people peacefully marching, demonstrating, and yes, demanding justice and better behavior from law enforcement and lawmakers. These are hopeful acts. Engaging them in them as a group helps everyone stay focused, helps everyone avoid despair. And sometimes hopeful acts from one group inspire others in different places and times. Nonviolent civil disobedience was used very effectively in India in the early to mid-20th century by the Mahatma Gandhi and his followers. That same idea traveled to the United States and fueled much of the 1960s civil rights movement, with students and others trained to not react to all manner of verbal and physical abuse. Those past movements continue to inform activists today. Hope is and must be active. But here's the thing. Darn it. We cannot know, ultimately, whether our virtuous acts will in fact lead to good results or any results. But remember, it took 75 years for women to win the right to vote. And most of those who worked for women's suffrage did not live to cast a legal vote. A century passed between the Emancipation Proclamation and the passage of the Voting Rights Act. With this kind of long-term perspective, it is amazing that we have come as far as we have in the work towards civil rights for people of color, and especially civil rights for gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender persons. Stonewall was 1968, Marriage equality, 2015. Somebody else do the math. 38 years? About? 48 years? Sometimes it's enough to know that we've done what we can. Sometimes it's enough to remember that we don't know what small act may mean all the difference to someone somewhere. And that's all well and good when we're talking about those big, awful things like unemployment and assault on the environment and crushing student debt. But when hope is personally hard to find, where do we look? Can we really give someone else hope, as our hymn said? I confess that sometimes when I sing those words, I feel like it's impossible. But a UCC colleague wrote her personal and very difficult story, difficult to hear, story of hope, which she gave me permission to share, and I'll share just a little bit of it. When she was a college freshman, my friend was assaulted and afterward suicidal and felt truly hopeless. Hospitalized, she told her mother that she just didn't have any hope. And she wrote, quote, "My mom said to me, 'That's okay. I'll hold the hope for you. I'll hope for you, and you can pick it up when you're ready.'" There was something about that statement that really was incredibly comforting, because often when you need hope the most, it's the hardest to generate on your own. In some ways, by telling me she was holding the hope, it kind of gave me hope to begin with. End quote. So where do we find hope? Where do you find hope? There is no one answer. We can find hope in assurance that life goes on. We can find hope in gardenias. We can find hope in our children. We can find hope and create hope in our actions for others and for the common good. We can hold hope for others when they're unable to do so for themselves. Let your hope be founded on the ground under your feet. Let it be lighted by the light that is within you, the light of your imagination, the light of courage and of care for others. Come, share your hope with me, and I'll share mine with you, and we will sing a song of love and justice for the whole world. So may it be.